You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia. I'm back in Bogota and on the line from Santa Marta shortly for this episode 159. We'll be speaking to Jackie de Klerk, a South African now native in Santa Marta, and talking about environmental issues. We're taking a short breather from the politics of Colombia just to talk about other things going on. And, well, you know, I can't start this show without of course sharing with you the reality that it's been an incredibly long week in Colombia, and a long week in politics. First Sunday, October the 2nd, the plebiscite, the referendum on the peace agreement signed off with the FARC was rejected by 18% of Colombia, but they won. They had a majority and they won, and so now under the auspices of renegotiation and not, let's say, kowtowing to impunity and the demands of the figurehead of the Central Democratic Party, Álvaro Uribe, the former president, there is a new and rushed negotiation taking place, because one wonders how long the guerrillas, the FARC guerrillas themselves, may remain patient with this. I'm sure that the upper echelons of the secretariat will be fine. But at the same time, what about the middle ranking and the lower ranking members of the guerrilla? I mean, will they be patient enough to stay on? You can read about various of my concerns published on my blog. That's richardmccall.com. You'll be able to see stuff there, because I've just been down in the far regions of Meta and Caquetá to some really very overlooked areas, forgotten areas, belonging to Colombia, but really another country altogether, where it's all cattle farming, guerrillas, and paramilitaries. And I was down there when Colombian President Juan Manuel Santos was awarded the Nobel Prize for Peace. And while those of you out there may not be pleased with this, it is a huge recognition of his tireless work. And it is tireless work. I am not a Santista, but it's tireless work into trying to achieve peace. And while I was there as well, the ELN announced, along with a delegation of the Colombian government in Caracas on Monday as well, that they too will be are prepared now to join up with formal peace talks, formal peace dialogues with the government. So, I mean, it goes from one thing to the next. These things take time, but this is the right time, isn't it? It feels like the right time. We all have different political views and opinions, but it feels like the right time. Over the week, we've been marches in Medellin, Bogota, and so on. It's a good expression of democracy, folks. It's good that these conversations are being had. Colombia is moving forward, because the damage done to tourism, for example, to tourism in that the referendum was declined, was rejected. People only read the headlines, not you and I, listeners to this show who want to know more about Colombia, but those floating voters out there, the sort of, people who just read the headlines in the Metro magazine in London or in other sort of, free newspapers, or as they walk past the newsstand, it's, you know, peace rejected in Colombia. The damage is done in a lot of cases. So that I know that travel agencies are scrambling to write press releases to ensure that the real situation is being shared. There is a renegotiation being put towards the negotiating table with the FARC. That'll continue in Cuba. And yes, well, we know that the other talks will share their time between Brazil, Venezuela, Chile, Cuba, Ecuador, and we'll see how those goes, because the ELN, I actually think, is more complex an entity than the FARC. So very interesting times in Colombia, as always. Never a dull moment here at all. So yes, please get in touch if you want to hear anyone be interviewed. If you have people to recommend, you can write to us, ColombiaCalling@gmail.com, website ColombiaCallingRadio.com, of course, Twitter and Facebook, Colombia Calling. I respond to all and every emails. I'm always flattered to hear from most of you. And it's a pleasure to be here, 159 episodes later, and talking about interesting things. So we will be back with Jackie the Clerk on the line from Santa Marta, talking about environmental issues, talking about Colombia and how she ended up here. Very exciting, very good news. And I'm signing off, but don't go away, because we'll be right back. Thank you for listening. And we're back. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And this is episode 159. And on the line from Santa Marta is a very special guest, Jackie de Klerk. She's South African. She's a journalist. She's been in Santa Marta, been in Colombia since March 2012. And so we're going to take this opportunity to talk to her a little bit about the Colombian coast. And of course, what she's been up to, because I see her articles popping up in my feeds all the time. So I thought it's time to get a fellow journalist on and talk about something, let's say, you know, more, let's say, open than politics and so on and so forth, that has been taking over the airwaves in Colombia of late. So Jackie, welcome on Colombia Calling.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
You're most nice welcome. You're most welcome. So tell me, Hurricane Matthew has passed through Santa Marta. How are people, reacting to this?
Well, right now, thank goodness it's a sunny day. But yeah, on Saturday and Sunday, especially Saturday night, it was hectic wind. Santa Marta itself, I think the mountains protected us, but so we're quite lucky. But I think higher up, with the rivers coming down, many people have lost their houses, and I have read that about 14,000 families lost houses or their roofs.
Wow.
So quite hectic, yeah.
14,000 people, but, and we don't even hear about that.
Yeah, and apparently Aracataca Fundación as well. Okay. Lost everything. So
Aracataca, the birthplace of Gabriel Garcia Marquez, and Fundacion, which is on the highway when you go south from Santa Marta towards Bogota, let's say, so like an hour south, I suppose it's the flash floods coming down the hills and in the rivers.
Exactly, and it's close to the Senegal Grande, so that whole area is wasteland land.
Yeah.
So
I imagine there's just so much water that the sponge of that wetland couldn't take it anymore.
Exactly. Overflows.
But we don't really get hit by hurricanes. I mean, that's one of the things that ProColombia always says to people in, you know, when they're looking for investors into Colombia and for tourism, they say, you know, we're out of the hurricane belt. So this was a little bit of an anomaly, wasn't it?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, at least we were lucky on this side, but closer to Venezuela in La Guajira, they were badly hit.
Yeah. Yeah, but again, I mean, none of you, the people you know or loved ones, were affected. You've all been fine.
Yes.
Okay. Well,
that's
a relief. That's a relief. Well, I'm glad it's moving on. And of course, our hearts go out to the people in Jamaica and Haiti who have been strafed by Hurricane Matthew as it keeps moving forward. But talking about this, Jackie. So listen, it's not overwhelmingly common for, let's say, a foreign woman to set up shop and live on the Colombian coast. It's kind of one of the more difficult places in Colombia to live for various reasons. So how is it that you ended up deciding to live in Santa Marta? Tell us a little bit about your life there.
Well, back, say, maybe 10 years ago, I suddenly became fascinated with Latin culture, which is very strange because in South Africa there's no Latin culture. My grandparents are Dutch. There's completely different. So I just got fascinated, and eventually I had enough money and I traveled to Colombia, in Bogota and Medellin. And then I had an idea. I did want to teach English some way. So the idea was to travel Colombia and then go and live and work in Nicaragua. But I arrived in Santa Marta and I just fell in love. As if you ask any foreigner here, they just fall in love with the, I think it's the easy life. It's small. You have the beaches, you have national parks, you have La Sierra Nevada right 40 minutes away. And I think that's what attracted me. And eventually, after extending my visa many times, I found a job and I stayed. So I think I'm here because I ran out of money to go to Nicaragua. And so I had to get a job. And yeah, so I worked at a school for 3 years. And over a year ago, I quit. And then I took up writing full time.
Wow, very good. Now, was it a big private school that you were working at in Santa Marta, or was it like a public school?
No, it was a private school.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But very nice. I mean, so you ran out of money, and since you ran out of money and never made it to Nicaragua in that first loop, have you since been to Nicaragua?
I have not.
So it's still on the list.
It's still there, yes.
Okay. It is a wonderful country. I haven't been since like 1998 or something, but it's still a wonderful country.
I've heard.
I'm sure you do. It is an easygoing lifestyle in Santa Marta, and you're right when you say it's small. And if you sort of develop your life around that central part, you know, you can walk everywhere and then just catch public transport to beaches if you need to. And you know, as you say, the Sierra Nevada is right there. Minca is not far away if you want to get out of the heat. I mean, it is a very attractive place to live, and it's still got a sort of town feel to it, hasn't it?
Completely, yeah. I mean, I'm from Johannesburg, so, and I never walked. You always have to drive. The public transport there doesn't really exist. So being here, being able to, I mean, I ride my bike a lot, so mm-hmm. I avoid the buses because it's just, they're really hot, and the drivers are a bit insane. So I ride my bike. I think everybody in the neighborhood knows me because I ride everywhere. To the doctor, up all the way up to, I don't know, kilometers away just to avoid the bus. But also it's a bit of exercise, and I also like to get a bit of suntan while I'm riding my bike.
Okay, very good.
That's my excuse.
And yeah. And do you live downtown in old Santa Marta, or do you live elsewhere?
I live in Los Cocos, so it's close to the marina, but just outside of the town. So I'm about 10 streets from the center.
Okay,
so I'm out, really, yeah.
And so you close can... to the. Yeah, I mean, you know, since you've been there since 2012, you've seen the absolute transformation of central Santa Marta.
Completely, just where I live in the last year, about... Okay, like 6 and maybe right now 7 buildings, apartment buildings are being built and have been built. And no one's living them. I don't know who's going to go there, but they must have forward thinking, or they must have huge expectations for Santa Marta, which I'm sure. And they're also changing, they're rebuilding and renovating roads. They've redone parks. So it's very nice. And even in the center, I mean, just in the 4 years I've been there, it's probably like tripled the amount of restaurants and bars, and amount of people that are coming, amount of tourists have increased. Just in Tayrona, I went a few months ago, it was so full. I've never seen it that full in my life, just for tourists.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it says a lot about Colombia that finally the word's out and they aren't afraid anymore.
No.
And they're coming.
It's very good. I mean, you know, this was always going to happen, I think, you know, especially with a place like Santa Marta, with everything on its doorstep that people look for in a holiday. But do you think that Santa Marta has the infrastructure to be able to accommodate so many people?
I'm not sure, because if you just see now with Hurricane Matthew, when it rained even a little bit, the streets flood. And all the from upstream down runs into the sea, and the sea, I mean, on the beaches when it comes up, it looks like a rubbish dump. So they really need to fix, obviously there's a water problem, the actual infrastructure of the how the sewage, how that works. The roads they are fixing just outside on the highway going towards, like the main highway going towards Tijuana, towards Venezuela. They are fixing it. They are widening the roads. So I think they are starting, but it's a long way to go because, I mean, just the amount of cars on the road right now, I can feel it because of my bike. There's a lot more cars, and so I think they are on their way. In Camino, but I have a long way to go, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say the same. I was recently up, in August, and you know, like you say about the restaurants, I've never seen so many restaurants in Santa Marta and downtown. I mean, that was the thing. When I first started coming to Colombia, we stayed in what would really be described as Mala Muertes, down near the port. I think they still exist, some of these horrible places. there's now so many options for you know, let's say hotels or upmarket hostels or just bed and breakfast or even boutiques, and the renovation of the colonial center has just been wonderful. But I do see, you know, when it comes to holiday time, not discussing sort of foreigners coming, but Colombians, all of them getting in their car from the interior of the country and driving up, I can only imagine what that does to Santa Marta, let's say in December or January.
Completely. I think, I'm not sure which holiday, maybe it was in June, and I saw pictures, I think I actually went to Rodero, which is the little suburb close to Santa Marta where all Colombian tourists go, and the beach was chock-a-block. I've never seen it so busy, and afterwards it was full of rubbish. And that's not Santa Marta, that's foreign, that's tourists. Colombian tourists come, make a mess, and they leave. And I think that's a lack of education, culture.
I think there's a lot of problems here with that. It's always someone else's job, you know, it's not my responsibility. But I mean, you know, Santa Marta has so much to offer, and you can understand why people here in Bogota, in, you know, chilly, gray, drizzly, I mean, wonderful at times, but at the moment it's chilly, gray, drizzly. You can understand why they get in their cars and they go up to, you know, they travel up to Santa Marta. And now with the dollar being so strong, you know, they're not going abroad, so it's more about domestic travel. You're only going to see more national tourists coming up, so prepare yourself
for this. Now,
as a freelance journalist, I mean, you've been writing a lot of travel pieces. I've seen, I mean, you know, you came down to Mompox. Was it for Yahoo Travel you did a piece for Yahoo?
Yes, I wrote about the filigrana.
Aha, which is wonderful.
Yes, that kind of artwork. So it was quite nice. And obviously, Mompox was awesome.
Of course, I know. I know that.
Yeah.
And you also do environmental stuff. Now, I think perhaps through environment, that's how you ended up meeting your husband, because you are now married here in Colombia.
Yes. Well, yeah. I mean, with Diego, I also met him just through friends, and then we eventually became more than friends. And he's a marine biologist. And he had his own dive center. Now he's working for another one. And with that, I mean, with his knowledge of marine biology and his brother, who is a graphic designer, their project is, they have two applications, but that's what they're working.
So they're working on applications. They're working on applications about mapping the marine life near to Santa Marta?
Well, their goals are of the whole world.
Okay.
So obviously right now they're focusing on Colombian divers, but they do have, if you download the app, you will see that many people have uploaded photos from Australia, we have South Africa, the Canary Islands, USA, California, Mexico. Obviously the majority is here in the Colombian coast, but that's their goal. And their other app, Selva, which is collecting land biodiversity data. So if you go hiking or any time in nature, you take a picture of a plant, a tree, an insect, a bird, you can upload it. And if you know the name or the scientific name, you can include it as well.
Fantastic. So, I mean, you know, it must tie into your interests totally as well.
No, completely, because through Diego, I'm now writing more about ocean conservation, and he obviously helps me with the scientific information. And so together, we're both very passionate about conservation, but more about conservation is the education. Because mm-hmm. without education, you can't conserve anything. Mm-hmm. So that's our goals together.
Well, I think that's fantastic. I mean, you know, your husband and wife team working like that, and he's making sure you don't put your foot in it scientifically.
Exactly.
I think that's fantastic. I think that's very good. And hats off to you for making a life there in Santa Marta, because you could have just become a beach bum. You know, you could have just opted out. that brings us quite nicely to the end of this first segment, because I know it's going to feed into our next segment, which is we're going to focus on something you've been investigating quite deeply and quite thoroughly, and that's the issues surrounding Cienega Grande, which is close to Santa Marta. So I'm going to draw this section of the interview to a close, and we'll come back after a short break to talk further about Cienega Grande with Jackie de Klerk, who's a freelance journalist from South Africa making her life in Santa Marta. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McColl. Please don't go away. And we're back. We're talking to Jackie de Klerk, who's a freelance journalist from South Africa, but making her life in Santa Marta. And of course, she's making making waves. Perhaps that's a pun I shouldn't have said. She's up there on the coast. But anyway, she's up there, and we've been talking about her life in Santa Marta. We've been talking about why Santa Marta is attractive, and it's for obvious reasons. Most of you out there will have understood this. But just run it by us again, Jackie. What are those apps that your husband, the marine biologist, has created to be able to map marine and land-based biology?
Yeah, the underwater one's called SEEK, CEAK. So like you're seeking the sea.
Okay, perfect.
And the other one is SELVA, like forest or jungle in Spanish.
Okay, so perfect. So people can look those up if they are interested. And of course, we'll put those on the website and on Facebook. We'll put up the flipboard that Jackie has too, which links to all of her published articles, so you can see who she is and contract her for further work, because that's what we do here. We try and promote and help one another. So Jackie, before I start waxing lyrical again, you've written a very big piece for the City paper about Cienega Grande. Give us a little bit of a background about what Cienega Grande is and what's going on.
Well, Cienega Grande in English would be like a big swamp. Mm-hmm. So basically about an hour from Santa mm-hmm. on the coast west, you'll find a huge wetlands system called the Cienega Grande. And right now, because of hundreds of years of human activities and construction and obviously the increase in population and economic and social problems, the whole estuary system is dying, being destroyed. And basically, I wrote about why, basically, and what are the factors involving it and basically what people need to know about it.
So, I mean, I know there's a national park, the Cienega Grande, and there's also Isla Salamanca is there as well. Is that right?
Exactly, yeah. That's also part of the whole system.
And that's a bird watcher's paradise.
Yes.
Okay. So what are the main threats to Cienega Grande, this wetland area an hour from Santa Marta?
Well, the main one that everybody can see is the road that connects Cienega with Barranquilla, because that road cuts through the entrance where the Cienega enters into the sea. That road cuts it. So that's the one problem, the actual cutting off, or they cut the connection between the sea and the swamp. And then further south, or inland, in the banana zone, obviously 100 years ago when they started to farm bananas and all the plantations, they started to cut off the rivers and redirect them to irrigate their crops. And so that disruption in the natural flow of all the rivers that come down from the Sierra Nevada, they've stopped water from entering the wetlands. And so the wetlands has a huge decrease in fresh water. The road, the main road, is blocking marine water or seawater to enter the wetlands. So the whole water, fresh water, seawater, the whole system is being destroyed because there's a huge mangrove forest.
Mm-hmm.
And because there's a lack of fresh water entering the wetlands, it's dying because the water is so salty. And so the whole, so you have the mangroves being extracted, which also causes them to die and also blocks off more fresh water from reaching them. You have the sea being blocked off, so marine life cannot enter into the wetlands. So fishermen are suffering because there's no fish to fish. Basically, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds pretty terrible. I mean, so I'm getting this image of this water table that requires continual fluidity, a flushing, you know, between, let's say, the salt water and the fresh water, and that's been hindered. I mean, you know, prohibited more than hindered. And I think a lot of it's down to, well, first aggressive cattle farming, then aggressive cotton farming, and now aggressive banana farming. I mean, it's been one wave of agricultural exploitation after another, which is now coming to the fore. So you interviewed some people down there, I believe. I mean, did you get to speak to fishermen themselves, more humble people who are really suffering?
I didn't speak to personally, but I did attend a forum here in Santa Monica where basically environmentalists and scientists spoke about what's happening to the public.
Mm-hmm.
And then and a few community members from those areas, they did come and speak. And they did say, like, our lives are completely changing because we have no water. Obviously, there's no money there. So even just, like, removing waste is a problem. You have the people that live on in the water on stilts.
Mm.
And as well, I mean, their whole life connection is with water.
Mm-hmm.
Water is contaminated because all the water that runs off from the crops is full of fertilizers and contaminants. So I think they are the ones who are suffering the most.
Of course. It's always the more humble people, the ones who are right in touch with the nature, who are suffering the most. And I can only imagine the contaminants. And of course, if we're close to Barranquilla, we're probably looking at mercury in the water too.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so it's not a very positive one, this thing. But so, I mean, you know, the road cuts off, let's say, the access from the ocean, from the salt water to the fresh water. Is there a solution that we should be promoting here, that we should be pushing?
Well, I mean, the best thing would have been to build a bridge that goes completely over it,
mm-hmm.
you know, like art, but that would have been too much money. Supposedly, the environmentalists, the main environmental authority of the coast, they have built holes, obviously, that can help the water mix, but it's not enough.
Mm-hmm.
And along the western border, there's more roads, and the dikes and the holes that supposedly allow the water to move, they get blocked,
yeah.
and no one comes to clean them, and no one removes the debris, and so there needs to be a greater action. I think it is possible to solve, but there needs to be a much greater action from the authorities.
Yeah.
And right now they want to amplify the road from Senegal to Barranquilla, and that will be even worse because they might actually have to cut more into the wetlands, which, as we know, will destroy vegetation, wildlife, the birds. The area is a very huge and important breeding ground for many birds that come specifically to this place to breed. And if we destroy their ecosystem, we you know, it's,
yeah, it's
the ecosystem and its environment.
So they're going to broaden that road, but they could have put a, I know the money involved these are spectacular amounts, surely, for a bridge. I'm imagining now the road from Panama's Tocumen Airport over all the mangroves and the wetlands that they built, and it's on stilts, let's say, this road. It's on struts, and so they haven't. Well, I mean, I'm sure there's an environmental repercussion for what they've done, but they've tried in as much as they could have done to have protected it. So, but you know, Colombia, with this kind of thing in Colombia, I sort of think that international help is required, really, for the funds. So I just don't know how it can be done fully and thoroughly in this fact. I mean, we're talking about this disaster, and of course the people who are being affected, but the economic drivers behind the construction are more powerful, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. I think here in the coast, there's a lot of corruption, unfortunately, and the people who's the most affected, their voice is not heard. And even the scientists and environmentalists who know exactly what's going on here in that environment, the big men aren't listening to them.
Mm.
They aren't listening to the consequences. Because if you look at other parts in the world, I think in Florida, they rehabilitated the wetland, and it can be a huge tourist drive, you know? And so it's a very delicate situation. And then they need to look at both sides, because we do need a vote, you know? It's not like it's very important, but they need to find out ways or get international help, infrastructure to fix the problem, because if not, it's a huge mess, and not just for Colombia, but for the world, because wetlands are an extremely important ecosystem, because they clean water, they hold water.
Yeah, I mean, it's a barrier between the fury of the ocean and of course the land as well. These wetlands, the mangrove swamps, are a natural barrier. They do this, but so what can we do? I mean, what are we recommended that we do to try and draw some attention to this situation, Jackie?
Well, I think even just us talking about it is important. I know that there's one scientist, Sandra Velarde, who is, I think, the biggest fighter against it. And so her voice is being heard. And at the forum that I attended, there were many people from Bogota. Even the Minister of Environment was there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, surely, the more people speak about it, or the more that people realize that it's not just the road that is the problem, it's also the agriculture.
Mm-hmm. So like you, I mean, as we've suggested, and as you're saying, agriculture, excessive agriculture, has been a real problem for this area. But then again, like we said, we're circling back around the same issue. It's the financial interests.
Exactly. And I think it's that, and also ignorance to what's actually happening to the environment.
Mm.
And I think that's important, that, like, for me speaking about it right now, for articles to be written.
Yeah, articles to be written. It just creates an awareness, a greater understanding of what's going on in the country. But of course, I mean, you mentioned your contact who has been campaigning on behalf of Cienega Grande and the protection. Surely she has come up against some problems, I imagine.
Of course. I've heard, I mean, she's been threatened by various organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the director of the National Parks of Colombia has also voiced her opinion, and also has been received a bit, you know,
yeah, what
threatening.
Can when your life is threatened over something, you know, natural like this, where do you go from here? I mean, what do you do? What's your next move? How do you live? I don't know.
Exactly.
I mean, we're just journalists. We're trying to tell the stories, but at the same time, we get very involved as well. You're not putting yourself in danger, are you, Jackie?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I wouldn't do that here okay. in Colombia.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, this is important. I mean, you have vested interests here just as I do. You know, you're married, I have a family, etc. And you just can't do these things. And it's a tough line to tread, isn't it? It's a tough situation to be exposed to. But, you know, we're journalists.
Exactly. Yeah, we have to.
Yeah, we have to do it. So let's tell me. So, you know, when we're talking about environmental reporting, we've been talking about Cienega Grande, which I've known for a long time has been an issue. And that's what we've been talking about. The town of Cienega itself is central to Gabriel Garcia Marquez. In the main plaza there, he used to sell books before he was a journalist, before he got into El Heraldo in Barranquilla, and the group of seven, I think it is, in the group of seven in Barranquilla. I mean, there are things that there, not just the natural side of things, that are very attractive to visit and that could really stimulate the economy and draw further awareness of the situation, I think. You know, if there was a greater understanding of, because sort of the Republican section of Cienega, the town, is actually quite scenic.
Yes, actually, I have been to Cienega a few times. I was there a few weeks ago, and I really enjoy going there. I mean, it's a tiny town. Unfortunately, it's quite dirty. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the architecture, even the main beach is beautiful. I think it's much cleaner than Santa Marta. And the actual history of Cienega and their traditions, their beliefs, their superstitions, it's for me incredible. Like, I love going there. And they have a devil's house, which I really enjoy that story about it.
I think you're going to have to share that about that.
The devil's house.
Yeah.
It's scary.
Go on, no, then. You can do it.
It's about a very rich man arrives, and overnight, he suddenly builds a huge, huge mansion. And the people are obviously poor and uneducated, and they cannot believe that a man can just arrive and build this castle amongst their small houses. And they believe that he must have made a pact with the devil to have such an amount of money to build such a huge house. Mm-hmm. And they believe that the man must have traded the lives of his workers, because he's a banana tycoon. Uh-huh. Or he takes the lives of children. And every year, apparently, a child does die from a school.
Really?
So they believe that. And apparently, there's also a black dog that protects the house. And if you walk past at night, the dog will attack you because he's trying to protect his house and his master. And the house is pretty scary. I would not walk past that at night.
Have you been inside?
In the day, kind of okay. But yes, I haven't been inside. I have been outside.
But I like, it's quite interesting. You know, it's scary, and it's quite chilling, because there's that link to children, sort of, let's say, dying. I mean, that's chilling, horrifying.
Yes.
But I like that the people, you know, people still have these beliefs. I think it draws together a sense of community. There's something collective about it, isn't there? And I mean, you know, in Mompox there's the devil's house as well, and no, it just stands there empty because no one will buy it. I mean, it's one of those things. It's on a corner. Everybody knows it. Hopefully, one day, you know, someone will put up like Éxito or Carulla will put a supermarket there, and no one will really care anymore. But I quite like these tales, these myths. I find them quite endearing to towns.
Completely, and I love it, and I feel that's why I think one of the reasons I like Colombia so much, and I think especially along the coast, mm-hmm. they are so superstitious. They have all their legends, like here there in Senegal, they have the Cayman Festival, mm-hmm. which is based on the legend of Tomasita, who apparently was attacked and eaten by a Cayman. And so for 3 days, I think in January, they just celebrate this Cayman and Tomasita, and they have their songs, and so I think it's great, because through the stories and the legends, you can understand the culture of the people and where they came from,
And I think you know, this draws me back to an interview some months ago with Brian Ray, the Irish guy who was attacked by the surfer, who was attacked by the Caiman. I think, and it wasn't far away. I mean, somewhere along the line, these legends had to have had an element of truth. You know, I mean, it has to come from somewhere.
Completely, and I'm sure, like a girl was taken by a Caiman. I mean, it's very, very possible.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And now, you know, this brings us back to the environmental side of things, with the squeeze being put on places like Cienega, in Cienega Grande, which do have a Caiman population, and the aggressive, agriculture around, you know, the Caimans are being forced into places and nearer to populations. I mean, that's the reality.
Exactly. So,
you know, so we have to think about these things. But I mean, you know, talking about Cienega Grande is great because it's not something I get to talk about too often. You are now clearly an expert, the expert in Cienega Grande in English. So let me just take this moment and say thank you so much, Jackie, for your time and for sharing with us your knowledge and your anecdotes and your humor towards living on the Colombian coast. It's been a real pleasure.
No, you're welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
You're most welcome. And of course, we'll get your husband on at some point to talk about his apps, Selva and Seek. And we will post your Flipboard on Facebook so people can see your articles. Hopefully we can drive up your visits. And we'll keep in touch, of course, because we want to know what's happening in Cienega Grande. We want to know the future of these regions. And of course, if you have any stories coming up in the future, please get in touch so we can share them here on Colombia Calling. It's been a real pleasure, and I just hope that you know, together we can all raise awareness for the plight of a really, really beautiful part of Colombia.
Great. Yes, I agree with you. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome. This is Colombia Calling. This is episode 159. We've been talking to Jackie de Klerk, the South African freelance journalist living in Santa Marta. I know you've enjoyed it. We'll be back next week with further interviewees talking about all things Colombia and Colombian. Of course, share the articles. Get onto our Facebook page. That's Colombia Calling. We're on Twitter at Colombia Calling, ColombiaCallingRadio.com website. And everything else. And if you have any other people that you think might be worth interviewing or have a story to tell that's Colombia related, we're all ears because this is an open show and we can talk about anything. So thank you again for tuning in. I'm Richard McCall. This is Colombia Calling and signing off for today.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.